Hi, and welcome to another podcast from the Cloud Evangelist website. I'm joined by an old friend today, Tim Marston of 10Gen. Tim, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, I'm Tim Marston, as Richard just observed. I'm the director of EMEA channels for 10Gen. So EMEA is Europe, Middle East and Africa.
Okay, and do you want to explain quickly who 10Gen are and what 10Gen do?
I certainly can. So 10Gen are the creators of a technology called MongoDB, which is what we like to think of as the leading NoSQL database technology, which, all of which we now need to try and explain.
And what is NoSQL when it's at home?
So NoSQL is a relatively common term in database circles these days. Essentially, it means not only SQL, and it labels a family of database technologies that all approach the management of data in a very different way to the traditional relational databases that have been the dominant force for the last 40 years.
So a lot of the proprietary databases, the dinosaurs of the Oracles, the MySQLs, etc., it's a replacement for...
Well, dinosaurs is one word. I mean,
I can use it. It's my podcast. I can get away with it.
So as we see things, relational databases are very useful in some situations, for sure, and have proven their worth, where you can predict your data and you are confident in how your data is going to be structured or is structured, and you can define that shape of your data up front ahead of whatever solutions or technology you may be developing to interact with that data. What MongoDB does is it approaches your data from a much more flexible standpoint. So we don't presume to know what your data is going to look like. You can deal with unstructured and semi-structured data. Essentially, you can almost fire any type of data or structured data into MongoDB, and MongoDB will ingest and store that data. The responsibility becomes very much on the developer to use good engineering practices so that you are retrieving that data and managing it in the application layer as a developer. But what this flexibility introduces is the ability to change the shape of your data, change the way in which you interact with your data as your application or your solution is developed over time. And this then gives you the, if you're following an agile development methodology like Scrum, which is now very, very common in development environments, it allows you to have that iterative mentality about your data as well as your application. And so that's why we see a huge amount of popularity and adoption at the moment.
I was just over at Summit in Boston, and of course it was Summit and JBoss World, so the halls were absolutely crammed full with both developers, engineers, sysadmins, and your usual CIO, CTO type people. And everywhere I seemed to look, there were MongoDB t-shirts. You seem to have clothed most of the geek world, so congratulations on that. But I think it's more than that. I think you've captured a groundswell of imagination.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, mugs and t-shirts. We're trying to put a mug in the hand of every developer out there.
That's, I haven't got one yet. Subtle hint.
Okay, we'll send you a box.
Thank you.
So the adoption is phenomenal, and we're seeing increasing volumes of downloads every month from our website, and the numbers are huge in terms of those downloads. I've never seen anything like it for a database. And that adoption is across a massive broad cross-section of developers. So it's everything from you know, hobbyists and new startups who are just conceptualizing some business idea through to enterprises who realize that what the functionality of MongoDB presents is an opportunity for them to achieve some competitive edge. And that's really where things become really exciting for us, is where we see MongoDB enabling business change for organizations through the performance that comes with this technology, by taking the data out of a tabular structure and putting it into, in our case, in a document structure. What that allows you to do is both scale your database horizontally on commodity hardware, so you can do that in the cloud, or you can do it on just, you know, cheap x86 boxes, and you can do that sort of infinitely to essentially scale up your ability to read and write into and out of that database in a way that you can't do with a traditional relational database. And all of that's automated, which is really, really sexy. And that allows then customers and end users to try and do new things with their data. Real-time analytics, for example, is something that was a very expensive or aspirational proposition in the past. And so people would throw their data into a data warehouse on the back end and do some kind of batch processing. Now, more and more with MongoDB, what you can do is you can actually do it on your live operational data, real-time analytics, that then meaningfully can impact your business decisions. And that's when it gets sexy.
And you're putting a lot of power back into the hands of the developers,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, exactly. So with a traditional relational data model, a lot of the decisions around the resilience of your data and the architecture of your data storage was controlled at the sort of sysadmin ops level. And those poor ops people had to do all kinds of manual processes to maintain the availability of that data for the applications. What we've now got is not only do you have this agile structure to your data, but also the control over the management of that data sits much more in the application layer with the developers. So you can ask the question, how much do you love your data, and treat each type of data in your environment differently. Mm-hmm. So it can be just fire and forget data writes into the database where it's like IP traffic and you don't care. Mm-hmm. Or if it's, say, transactional information, you can say that that data's got to go to multiple nodes in your database across multiple data centers. So you have this massive, massive security capability that you simply don't get with relational.
I think the cool thing for me is coming from, you know, I come from a community developer background over the last 10, 12 years. Mm. And of course, a lot of the technology that I've built is based around, say, Perl and MySQL. And looking at the forums, the TenGen and the MongoDB forums are packed full of the best of the brains. Mm. They're the brightest of the best.
We like to think so. I mean, certainly that we're very popular. And I think part of the reason we are so popular with a lot of the early adopter group is the ease with which you can spin up and play with MongoDB. So it's free to download and free to use. You can just go to mongodb.org, download it. You don't have to register or anything like that. And it's very easy to install and get up and running. And that then is part of the reason I think we've been so successful.
And I think, you know, with the whole OpenShift thing with Red Hat, I think we're trying to contribute to that as well. I mean, we've got an agreement in place as a distributor of sorts. But I think if you go onto the TenGen website, there's about four or five videos which show you how to get started with various different development environments on PHP and Python with MongoDB on OpenShift in 3 minutes flat.
OpenShift is really exciting. And you know, we see, and I think everybody sees, and Red Hat as much as us, that, you know, platform as a service is really where the future is for a lot of what is currently infrastructure in IT, and OpenShift is certainly, I think, one of the leading platforms for that. Mm-hmm. And so our engineering team work very closely with the OpenShift engineering team to make sure that MongoDB plays very nicely within the OpenShift environment.
It's almost performance tuned, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So
now, you know, a lot of the development that we have comes from the upstream community. How does the upstream community with MongoDB affect commercial offerings from TenGen at all?
That's a good question. So we are open source, hence MongoDB is free to download, free to use, and you're under no obligation to enter into a commercial agreement with TenGen if you use MongoDB.
Right.
So our model is a subscription model, similar to Red Hat. In terms of the upstream contribution, all of the commits for the code for MongoDB at the core, the database technology, are from TenGen employees, right, and TenGen staff. So we do control the IP and the architecture of the MongoDB core product.
Right.
Where the community tend to have most development interaction with us is on the drivers. So the MongoDB engine is something we have sort of control over, if you like, mm-hmm, very directly. But the drivers that plug that into each development language, like Java or Python or PHP, those are sometimes sort of architected and driven by ourselves as TenGen, and then we commercially support them, and we do that for all the major languages. But there are also then a lot of drivers for some of the more innovative languages or mm-hmm, the less frequently used languages, which are community driven and supported, and those are maintained by the community. And indeed, there are sometimes multiple instances of different types of driver for some of the languages, and some of those may be community supported. So there's a lot of kind of community interest around at the driver level, and those are always Apache licensed. So, you know, individual users can customize those drivers, and they don't have to republish what they do. So they can keep, you know, if it's very commercially sensitive for them in some way, they can keep that in house.
And you've seen the commercial growth of TenGen with adoptees in the commercial space grow.
Yeah, massively so at the moment. And for commercial customers, what we typically see is scalability being often the biggest hook for them to look at us. So they've got a proprietary database that they've expanded vertically as much as they can, bought bigger boxes, bigger licenses, that kind of thing, and then it's reached a point where it's just painfully expensive and the performance is bad. Mm-hmm. And then they realize that they can get nearly all of the functionality of that relational database, but in a way that allows them to scale up as they need their infrastructure behind on commodity hardware. And it's a no-brainer for them to then look at using MongoDB in those situations. But we don't, I mean, we don't go into organizations and say to them, look, move all your databases to MongoDB, because there's a lot of mind shift involved. So we like to see it as a step-by-step process, because you're moving control of the databases to the developers, there's a lot more rigor can be required in terms of internal process, or at least changes in those internal processes.
Right.
And so it's best for organizations to look at identifying one or two use cases, initial projects where they can use MongoDB, get it into production, feel the benefits from that first implementation, and then grow out from there and build their competence and expertise around this new approach to data management.
It's interesting. We were both over in Germany about, must be 18 months ago, before I was a parent. God, back in time.
I was only just a parent then, I think.
You were only just a parent. Yeah. And we were over in Germany together at World Hosting Day, which was a week-long shindig in Rusten on the German border. And it was at the time when cloud certainly wasn't new, but certainly you were starting to see the emerging players start to rack up with their service offerings and to start and test the waters with what they thought would be something that they could offer commercially and support. And even in that 18 months, you've seen massive transition in cloud. Massive transition.
The change has been phenomenal. I mean, I remember when we went to that event, and Red Hat Enterprise Virtualization was pretty new on the street, and yep. And there was a huge amount of interest then in that. And now you look at the breadth of portfolio that Red Hat's got around that whole space.
Well, I think it's not just looking at Red Hat products, but it's also looking at the risk appetite of customers who, if you listen to analysts back in the day, whether it was Gartner or Forrester, IDC, all shoving figures in the air and saying, you know, it's £82 billion cloud's going to be worth, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's more the fact that now customers, especially in the enterprise and commercial space, can start to empower themselves and understand getting the best out of their developers to understand, hey, we can build this SandPit environment. We can build this. We know what we can start migrating from our whole SOE cloud or our SOE data center into a public / private / hybrid type cloud. Yeah. I mean, do you get involved a lot with customers who are looking at migrating to cloud, or who are looking at who have started taking those initial steps?
Yeah, so our customers are obviously in all shapes, sizes, and forms, but we have, you know, environments where we have customers who host their solutions wholly in a public cloud, public multi-tenant cloud, and you know, we have an example of a customer in Israel who manage a VoIP platform.
Wow.
On that basis, which is amazing. But that's the kind of performance you can get. Mm-hmm. But similarly, you have then other customers who are doing things like at a group level hosting a MongoDB as a service,
yep,
to deliver out to their various subsidiaries and entities across Europe.
And what are the verticals that you're targeting? I mean, is it across every vertical, or
so
are you seeing specific growth in?
It's been a very interesting picture for us. So when TenGen started, and perhaps I should maybe give a bit of the background to the company.
Yeah.
We were born in 2007. Our founder, Dwight Merriman, who's our CEO, was previously CTO at DoubleClick in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. So DoubleClick was a massive ad platform, demanded low latency, billions of impressions each day. And in order to meet that demand, they had to do a sort of a manually sharded relational database across lots of very big boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And when they eventually sold DoubleClick and moved on to their next venture, that they look back and they realize that they spent a majority of their effort and infrastructure spend was on just managing this database and doing these manual sharding tasks. And so that's when the idea for a technology like MongoDB, where so much of that is automated and it's on commodity hardware, that's where that, yep, came from. And the early use cases were, you know, with a, as you'd expect with a very new technology, were in verticals that were comfortable with greater risk. So that was sort of social networking, content management, mm-hmm, sort of media, those kinds of areas. But we've only more recently come into EMEA, so that we've had a physical presence here for a little over a year now. And the profile here has been in some ways similar, but in some ways quite different. So what we've seen most interestingly here is a phenomenal adoption with mobile telco companies. So we're working with a large number of the bigger mobile telco companies in Europe now. Most publicly, we can talk about O2. We've done a number of projects with them, and the use cases that we see are very broad and varied with these entities. So it can be anything from handset activations through to customer incentive schemes based on geolocation of the handset, and all of this are functions that, in many cases, they've tried to deliver with traditional relational databases, and simply it wouldn't work. And so MongoDB's been an enabler of business function for them. So that's one vertical that we've worked particularly closely with. What we're also seeing emerging as a pattern is government.
Yep.
In this age of austerity, as they are looking to deliver more for less, we represent a solution for them in that regard, and also the ability to ingest all these vast quantities of mixed structures of data into single data sources. Is plays a lot, I think, to the needs of central government in many countries now. And so a good example is the Indian national ID card system runs on MongoDB. That's pretty big data.
And I think we recognize, you know, as a corporate entity, that the whole NoSQL thing needed to be solved. And building it around also a Red Hat stack gave such a strong value proposition alongside JBoss.
Yeah.
It's just a complete no-brainer, and we're seeing a lot of traction.
Yeah.
So as we move into the next iteration of cloud, where do you see the whole 10-gen NoSQL growth curve coming from?
Gosh, into the next iteration of cloud.
Well, what I'm saying like that, the Web 2.0 got thrown about as the next buzzword by anyone who'd listened to it, Tim O'Reilly downwards. And I see now where analysts have previously said, you know, customers are nervous about going to public cloud, which, you know, I'm seeing people standing up data centers. I'm presuming they wouldn't stand them up if they didn't think there was going to be revenue attached to that. Do you see from a big data perspective in public cloud that 10-gen has a specific use case or...?
So I guess really I would sort of look more to where we see ourselves positioning in a broader sense.
Right.
So rather than just looking at cloud, I mean, our intention really is to be the leading, almost the default non-relational data store.
Right.
So and that's regardless of operating environment, be that cloud or on-premise. But increasingly, I think the usage profile and new usage is coming into cloud environments rather than expansion of existing hardware infrastructure on site. So what I think the future for MongoDB would hold, well, it's hard to divine where the future is going, but if we say it's, you know, platform as a service and those kinds of environments, then, you know, you will see increasingly where scenarios where MongoDB is just the default data store behind a platform that's being offered up in the cloud. And if we can achieve that level of adoption and mindshare that essentially we become that default conceptual data store, people will probably stop caring that MongoDB is underneath. It'll be an assumed functionality of the of the platform that they're using. And I guess that's where we're kind of
It's almost like wrapping up the whole open source story and just selling it as an application rather than.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got all the underlying open source goodness underneath it, but people are just buying something that's fit for purpose.
Well, the great thing now is that the whole idea of open source is not so much about
men in pants delivering software.
It's not a religious conversion anymore, and it's not. And you're not kind of although there's clearly underlying ethical benefits to an open source environment.
Yep.
It's actually now more about the efficiency of the business model that's been shown by Red Hat and we're trying to emulate. And that is and that's really where open source then starts to deliver benefits in the future. So it's you know, the conversations I have with partners and with customers, we don't really talk about open source very much in the traditional way that you would expect, you know, having to defend the idea of community contributions and that kind of thing. It's now much more about how having that community interaction and community you know, input into the evolution of your product enables so much more agility in your product that gives you that ability to deliver rich functionality out to the community and to the users.
Okay, so what's the easiest way to start playing with MongoDB apart from to sign up for an OpenShift account?
Well, aside from signing up for an OpenShift account.
Or getting an OpenShift USB key. If you mug me in the street, I might give you an OpenShift USB key.
So, you know, mongodb.org, you can just go straight there. It's, I think, two clicks to download it. No registration required. You know, I work in the sales organization. In a way, I wish we did require registrations because I'd love to call everybody. But we recognize that actually adoption is more important for us. So we don't know many of the places where we're being used.
Now, saying that, you can actually come face-to-face. I think I'm doing a MongoDB 10-gen event on the 30th of August, Thames Valley one, which I'll be pimping out on my blog. You'll be able to come along and meet me and say hello and meet Tim.
In actual fact, I would encourage any listeners to go to meetup.com. Probably most of our MongoDB user groups are on there. So you'll find there is likely to be a user group somewhere in your local area. We have them in multiple cities across the Netherlands, France, Germany, Sweden, UK, and beyond.
What about our North American friends?
Our North American friends? Oh, okay, yes. Talking globally. I think we cover most of both seaboards and some of the territory in between as well. I think there is MongoDB Seattle, which is one of our big annual events coming up pretty soon.
Sure.
We've got MongoDB Munich coming up in October, which
15th
is a big,
of October, yep.
Big one-day conference in Germany. We will be doing another, probably a Mongo UK again in a few months' time. The MongoDB days are really, if you're already touching or interested in playing with MongoDB properly, they're really, really good because it's a one-day conference with multiple streams with some really good kind of coaching, if you like, involved, so you can really get to grips with some of the down and dirty. It's easy to spin up and use MongoDB, but there's a lot of tricks to learn along the way.
So you're saying get down and dirty with MongoDB users, is that what you're saying?
Oh, you journalists.
Well, I'm not a journalist. I'm a geek wannabe journalist. Okay, so 15th of October, MongoDB Munich. I'm probably going to head out there as well. You can register online for that. But if you want to get to grips with MongoDB quickly, as I said, you know, get down to the website, or alternatively, get onto OpenShift and spin it up in 3 or 4 minutes flat. Yeah. I've been with Tim Marsden. Tim, thanks very much for taking the time to get in front of a microphone. I've been trying to do this for weeks. Appreciate your time. Thanks, guys. Bye. We'll be right back.